Hi everybody, welcome back. At least I'm assuming some of you came back. It is about quarter after five in the afternoon of September 3rd, 2014, wherever that is in relation to infinity. I just got in from work. This seems to be the most appropriate time to offer the response to the questions that came in over the last month. It was a very nice day here in Winnipeg, weather-wise. Since the beginning of August, our summer weather has been pretty nice. Sometimes a bit too hot and humid, but recently a little cooler. So for me, it's just right at this moment. I took last week off work just to take a bit of a break. Just puttered around my apartment, read some good books, saw a few movies, hung out with a few friends. A couple of days ago, I was off to one of the larger lakes here in Manitoba. We have thousands of lakes in this province, but we have two major lakes that are almost like inland oceans. So to get away to the shores of one of these lakes is quite a nice difference from the usual prairie landscape. I've had about nine people write in, mainly with questions. There were a couple of comments. Before we get down to that, as always, I want to thank anyone who has sent in questions or comments, words of appreciation. I want to thank those of you who have ordered Budescence through the website. And as always, I want to thank those who have sent in donations. And I want to thank Marcus Fellows for establishing this website in the first place and for continuing to post these responses each month. As I'm accustomed to doing at the beginning of these responses now, I'd like to say that if you find any of what I'm saying somewhat confusing, and you're wanting a more general overview of what it is I'm offering here, you might, if you're interested, have a look or have a listen to the two main talks on this website. If you go to the listen drop box and you go down to the talks heading, under that heading you will find two talks. One is titled An Overview of Spiritual Awakening, and the other is titled Acknowledging the Moment. And these talks will give you the broadest sense of what I'm offering here. As I said, I've had about nine people write in, so let's get down to that now. A first person has written in saying, "Hello, Daryl. I was just writing as a question has come up from listening to your questions answered in May, specifically to the question, what am I, what actually is? There was a question asked about what happens to the mind at the point of dissolution of the body or death. You responded by saying that if we investigate what actually is, we find an indefinable event or happening that doesn't seem to be a body or a mind, but is totally indefinable. You went on to say that whatever this is, it seems to be pulsating and vibrant, and that it seems to appear and disappear at night in deep sleep and by day on waking. Does this in fact mean then that death is the end of this indefinable thing that is happening? Because presumably death is the final disappearance. I'm very troubled by this disappearance, and I suppose my whole preoccupation with all of this is a result of this knowledge lurking somewhere inside me that one day all of this, everything I hold dear, and particularly that thing I give the most importance to, most importance to existence itself, is going to disappear completely. But what then? Just a timeless, spaceless, experienceless absence, which my mind tries to grasp with an image of blankness, which I find terrifying? I don't know if this is even a question, really. I'm just realizing that the whole obsession with this is probably motivated by some deep fear of absence, and is an attempt to find or to know something which is beyond the whole arising, ceasing, appearing, and disappearing affair. When I read about non-duality, whether more modern interpretations or in classical Buddhism or Advaita, it seems very much as though these people are speaking about something that is unchanging, deathless, unborn, absolute, to use the terminology therein. These words are like little treats or sweeties to my terrified subconscious, and I latch onto them and think I must not yet have found this thing, because I certainly am not aware of it, whatever it may be, and I'm just aware of the appearing, disappearing, arising, ceasing business. I'm also confused because you sometimes seem to talk in a way that implies there may be something more than this ephemeral play of appearances and disappearances. And while your language is not as colorful as a lot of others, you certainly seem to quote people who are unafraid of using these images. I don't really know if this is a question or if you can find one in there, but some clarification on where you stand, for some reason, would be helpful. Many thanks. All right. I don't really know what I can offer in response to this other than, you know, perhaps to clarify my own sense of existence a little more. So, in our day-to-day existence, most of us can generally point to a couple of different things in the world of apparent form. So we have what we call the physical happening of the moment, and we have what we call mental activities. So we have all the thoughts about life, but then we have what we would actually call the physical happening of life. So right now, if we were to examine the actual life that we have, the thing that what's obvious that we would call life, we have this vibrant, pulsing sense of presence. We have a feeling of existing right now. There's a sense that right now there's an isness or being that's not a thought. So we could point to it, as we normally would point to it, as the physical happening of this moment. Now, that phrase just points to the actual happening. Even if we drop all the thoughts in this moment, it doesn't feel as though it's blank. It doesn't feel as though there's nothing. There is, again, what we could point to as a vibrant, pulsing happening of this moment, what we would usually call seeing, hearing, touching, tasting, smelling, and thinking, this actual happening. And even if we don't call it anything, you know, this happening that we call seeing, even if we don't call it seeing, it doesn't feel like there's nothing. So there's this happening that's not a thought. So right now, for every one of us, it feels as though there's this happening of the moment. Now the words, the happening of the moment, just point to this vibrancy, this vibrant sense of presence that's not a thought. Even if we drop all the thoughts in this moment, there's just this. We could call it just this. Now, it's quite obvious to me that none of the names that we use to point to this are actually what its true name is. I mean, it has no true name. the labels that we use to point to various aspects of this happening are simply sounds, and they take on meaning when they point to different portions of this happening. So I could talk about a body, I could talk about walls and a floor, and those are simply sounds that point to different portions of this happening. So what I call a wall, you know, in a different country, they use a different sound to point to that. Even if we drop all the labels in this moment, that happening that we call a wall, the happening that's not a thought, that still makes itself obvious. So it's obvious to me that these labels aren't really any true name for this happening. They're just apparent sounds that point to certain portions of this happening. It's also obvious to me that this happening has no specific form, because in what I would call my general life experience, whatever apparent form I might identify, whether it's a thought or a mood or a relationship or a body or a house or a city or a country, you know, even the landscape itself, mountains, the weather, all of these apparent forms are changing in some way. So it becomes obvious that whatever apparent form is identified, whatever particular pattern or arrangement is identified in existence, in this totally unexplainable happening, that apparent form, that particular pattern, that particular arrangement is changing. So all of these forms, they seem to appear, grow older, and then fade away. However, the whole time that these apparent forms are arising, changing, and fading away, my actual sense of existence is just an ongoing sense of presence, a vibrant sense that something's happening right now. So it doesn't matter how many things change, there's this ongoing sense of a vibrant, pulsing presence. Now, even this immediate sense of a vibrant, pulsing presence, that changes. We have, you know, and when it changes, we might call that, a different state of existence. So we have what we call the waking state, we have a dreaming state, we have a sleeping state. So this vibrant sense of presence, this immediate sense of vibrancy, this also has no particular form. It changes. And at a certain point, it's what we might call deep sleep. Now, in this apparent state that we call deep sleep, it doesn't feel as though there is any immediate sense of presence. It seems like everything's just kind of melted away. However, when this immediate sense of pulsation and vibration reasserts itself, we have the sense that we either had a good night's sleep or not such a good night's sleep. So we have this sense of a gap between one day and the next morning. If this sense of presence truly did disappear absolutely, there wouldn't be any sense of a gap between the yesterday and this morning. So somehow in this state that we call deep sleep, even though there was no sense of being present, there was no sense of any vibrant pulsing event, somehow that wasn't a total state of blankness, a total state of nothingness. Because as I say, when this happening changes its expression and becomes what we call waking up in the morning, there is the feeling that we either had a comfortable night's sleep or we didn't. So with this immediate sense of presence, this is all I've ever experienced. Like, I've never experienced the beginning of anything or the ending of anything. I've never experienced the beginning of this sense of presence, and I've never experienced the end of this sense of presence. All I've ever experienced, all that's ever made itself obvious, is this sense of presence, that something seems to be happening. However, whatever this is, it has no particular name, and it has no particular form. If the focus goes on form, it seems like all kinds of things are beginning and ending. But all of these apparent forms are simply expressions of this basic sense that something is happening. So there is just this happening or sense of presence, and it has no particular form. And that's all I've ever experienced, or that's all that has ever made itself obvious. Now, another thing that's obvious is that there isn't any experience of anything apart from this sense of presence that has no particular name and no particular form. There is no experience of anything else apart from this. And there's no experience of anything making this happening express itself in the way it expresses itself. So even the whole sense of, you know, what I might describe as my body, my process, my needs, my interests, my concerns, my abilities and my lack of abilities, none of that is my doing. It's not that my process is actively making that happen, or there's some portion of me that's making any of that happen. It just happens. It's all just this vibrant, pulsing event or happening, this sense of presence, this sense of isness or being. And again, these words, these are simply pointing to a vibrancy, an energetic vibrancy that's not a word. We can drop all the labels right now. We can throw away all the ideas right now. And that doesn't leave us with a sense that there's nothing happening or a blankness. It doesn't leave us with the feeling that everything comes to an end. So there is what might be pointed to, this vibrant pulsing buzz and tingle. The tingling, vibrant happening of the moment, this vibrant sense of presence. Now, when this is acknowledged, it becomes very, very difficult to find a word for this, because none of the words make any sense. The word, we could say, it's just what is. Well, there doesn't seem to be any stable thing that is. There is this ephemeral vibrancy that doesn't seem to have any particular form. Some people call it being, but there isn't any particular thing that can be identified as actually being. So we could call it flow, but the difficulty with the word flow is that flow doesn't describe anything. It just indicates a constant absence of any describable form. So just to wrap this up, all that has ever made itself obvious in my apparent experience is just this vibrant, pulsing sense of presence, this energetic happening of this moment. It's obvious to me that there's no way to give it any legitimate name, and it's obvious that there's no way to describe it as any particular form, because it has no particular form. It's also obvious that it simply is, it simply occurs spontaneously. Whatever this is just happens. It's just happening. And when I use the word happening, I'm not pointing to something describable. When I use the word happening, it's just this vibrant, pulsing sense of presence that obviously has no legitimate form and no particular name. Now, I don't recall experiencing the beginning of this ongoing sense of presence. I don't recall, I haven't experienced the ending of this so-called sense of presence. So all that ever seems to be experienced is an ongoing flow of appearances, which is always just this sense of presence, the sense of what we might call here and now. If I look out at the so-called external world, and I see various forms arising and passing away, I'm not experiencing that as the ending of something, because there is the constant sense of presence that has no particular form. So even the world of science, if they talk about someone passing away, they will say that no, it's just their particular arrangement has changed. So all of the matter there and the energy there, it hasn't disappeared, it hasn't come to an end, it simply changes, which is in accordance with what's very easy to observe, that whatever this ongoing sense of presence is, it has no particular form. We see something like a tree, a form that we call a tree. We see it grow up, age, die, fall down, and it rots away. And so the form of that tree turns to powder, and then that powder becomes so small, we'll say that it's returned to the form of energy. But we don't say that anything has come to an end. So if we really do acknowledge what has made itself obvious in our so-called experience, it may be acknowledged that we have never experienced a beginning or ending of anything. All we've ever experienced, all that's ever made itself obvious for everyone, for every apparent person, is simply an ongoing sense of vibrant presence. A moving, shifting, dancing, eventing. So, in a way, we could say this is the constant, whatever this is. But again, that becomes absurd because there's nothing identifiable that's a constant. Some people will say, well, this sense of presence, we'd call that awareness, and that awareness is constant. But the fact of the matter is, I mean, in Buddhism, they debated this at one point, and it was described how if we saw a fire and we put, some wood was burning, and then the wood was burned up and we threw some dry grass on there, and then the grass dried up and we threw some coal on there, and then the coal burned up and we threw on, some kind of gasoline or petrol of some kind, we wouldn't say that that was exactly the same fire. We would say that it was a wood fire, a grass fire, a coal fire, a gas fire, and so on. We're not saying there's a constant fire there, that the fire is a constant. And in the same way, it was pointed out that, in this apparent awareness, if there's an awareness that we call seeing, that's not the same as an awareness we call hearing. And if there's an awareness that we call hearing, that's not the same as an awareness that we call touching. And if there's an awareness we call touching, that's not the same as an awareness we call tasting. Now, we can't find an awareness that exists separate from what we call seeing, hearing, touching, tasting, smelling, and thinking. Because what we call awareness is this happening that we call seeing, hearing, touching, tasting, smelling, and thinking. We don't experience anything separate from this happening. So again, even if we call it awareness, we don't find some constant awareness. Whatever this is, it has no apparent form. It has no name. So it becomes impossible to say anything about it. To say anything legitimate about it, it becomes impossible. And wonder of wonders, when it does become impossible to say anything about it, we discover that it's not really necessary to say anything about it, because even if all the thoughts fade away in this moment, this, whatever this is, still makes itself obvious. And more than that, it will, part of its expression will be the next thought that arises. We don't even know what that is. We don't have an, you know, we call it thought and description because somebody, apparently within our storyline, somebody taught us to call it that. But there's no way of saying what that is either. So I don't know if I'm expressing this in any clearer fashion than I have in the past, but you know, this is an attempt to clarify my apparent sense of existence. There's just this. There's no way of saying what it is. Nothing is making it happen. It's not a, you know, we can't say it is something in particular because it doesn't have a name and it doesn't have a particular form. And we can't say it's nothing because even if all the thoughts fade away in this moment, it doesn't feel like nothingness. And even, you know, the word is not this, you know, the label that points to this happening is not the happening. So we often hear stories about Zen masters who, you know, somebody comes and asks them, where do I find truth? And the Zen master smashes a banana in their face. Why would the Zen master smash a banana in somebody's face when they're asking where is truth? It's simply an attempt to startle them out of the world of thought and come to the actual vibrant happening that this moment is. Something that can't be defined in any way whatsoever. Something that is, or not something, but whatever this is, it simply is. Here it is. There isn't anybody, there isn't any person making it happen. In fact, every so-called person is an expression of this, whatever this is. So now, getting to this person's question about death, what happens with death? I can't really make a comment on death because I've never experienced death. I've never seen anything that we could call death. Not, I mean, people seem to use this word death as the ending of something. But I've never seen the ending of anything. I've never seen the beginning of anything, and I've never seen the ending of anything. All that has ever made itself obvious is this sense of presence, which never seems to have any particular form, but it is simply an ongoing sense of presence. Since I've never experienced anything but this sense of presence, I have no way of relating to a notion of ending. So as I said, there is simply this ongoing sense of presence. I don't have an experience of it beginning. I can't say when it began. And the whole notion of it ending, I don't have any experience of anything ending. All I've ever experienced is an ongoing sense of presence that has no particular name, no particular form. Whatever this is, it simply happens spontaneously. Whatever appears to exist is not really what's existing because those appearances are passing forms that have no stable arrangement. So there's no way of ever saying what this is. there's no way for me to conceive of it having a beginning or an ending. Now, even if I look into the world of apparent form, you know, and I describe it in terms of form, then I'll say, you know, at night I go to sleep. And there's an absence of consciousness. There's an absence of the sense of presence. But in that absence, there isn't any sense of a me being cognizant of an absence. It's just whatever this sense of presence is, this vibrant sense of presence is in this moment, it simply melts away. And then it seems as though the next morning, I remember that I had a sense of resting well or not resting very well. So obviously there was still some odd sense of presence. It just wasn't what we would call this vibrant pulsing sense of presence, this immediate sense of vibrancy. However, in this other expression, this other appearance of this sense of presence, I didn't have the experience of me lying there thinking there was a nothingness or a blankness. I didn't have the feeling of a consciousness that was registering nothingness or an absence. The whole sense of consciousness just wasn't even pertinent to that expression. But again, this is just the world of apparent form, and to try to define whatever this is in terms of form is just ridiculous, because whatever it seems to be now, it's going to be different a moment from now, and 2 moments from now, and 6 moments from now, and it's going to be different tonight, and then it's going to be different tomorrow morning, and it's one way in the summer, and it seems to be something else in what we call a winter, and all of these are its expression. There is just this ongoing sense of a happening or a presence that doesn't really have any particular form or name. So I don't know if that adds any clarity to, you know, my stance, my sense of existence, in expressing my sense of existence, but that's all that's coming up in relation to this question about death and fears of death. I can't really make any other comment because, as I say, I've never experienced a beginning, an ultimate beginning or an ending. I've never experienced anything ultimately called birth or death. All that has ever made itself obvious is this ongoing sense of presence and the fact that it has no substantial form, no stable arrangement of pattern or form. All right. Another person has written in asking me to comment on so-called paranormal phenomena from my non-dual sensibility. He points out a few specific examples. He points to Robert Adams had once spoken of Ramana Maharshi appearing to him when he was a child. So Robert Adams grew up in North America, and he claimed that he saw an image of Ramana Maharshi, who lived in India, appeared to him when he was a child. Also, Robert says that he was able to say the words God, 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 and would be able to get whatever he wanted after repeating those words 3 times. He was also able to pass school tests without studying by simply saying these 3 magic words, and the answers would simply come to him. This person also pointed out the autobiography of a yogi by Yogananda, in which there were so many descriptions of what might be considered paranormal or almost supernormal abilities found in India that it was almost as though, you know, it was just an ongoing place of miracles. Now, this person who wrote in goes on to say, on the one hand, I would be as incredulous about this stuff as the next person and would write them off as due to mental illness, magical thinking, or drugs. But on the other, I've had some incredible paranormal experiences myself that came out of nowhere and really knocked me on my butt as far as upending what I thought was possible or not. He goes on to say, I once asked you a question about Christ's resurrection, and I did that because while you frequently cite the record of him being angry, beaten, and crucified, as if that were true, you, on the other hand, are silent about other things attributed to him, such as his miracles and resurrection. The nature of my question is to kindly draw you out of what seems to be an apparent silence on such controversial phenomena, and to kindly inquire about a few things. So he lists 5 points specifically that he wants to ask me about. So just to summarize, there are all kinds of what we might call abnormal experiences or super normal experiences where it seems as though maybe certain human beings have abilities way beyond what we usually assume their abilities are. So, you know, it might be a premonition of something that's going to happen in the future, and it does seem to come true. People will often say that at the exact moment a family member died, or, you know, and they were maybe thousands of miles away from a very close relative, and that close relative had some sense at the exact moment that that person appeared to die of something happening to that person. So there are any number of experiences, apparent experiences, in the lives of many human beings that appear to be way beyond what appear to have a, you know, some people appear to have abilities that are way beyond what we would normally assume the abilities of a human being to be. And we might call these superhuman abilities or paranormal abilities. And this person is asking what my sense of all of this is from this non-dual sensibility that I'm presenting. So he's noticed that I can't really actually even recall making a comment on paranormal abilities. So he's asking if my silence on this is due to no one asking me about this before. And yes, actually, quite frankly, that is the case. No one has ever asked me about this before. Not that I can recall. His second point asks, does your apparent silence mean that you don't know how such phenomena would be accounted for by a non-dual sensibility if they really did occur? So, no. I know very directly what the non-dual sense of this would be. It's that, a non-dual sensibility is saying that it's not possible to truly define anything that's happening. So in this moment, this very ordinary moment where it seems like there is somebody listening to a talk by Daryl Bailey on a particular website, a non-dual sensibility would say that that description is not true. That whatever this is, this vibrant pulsing happening or event or sense of presence or isness or being right here and now, whatever this is, there actually isn't any true way of saying what it is. So the Buddha would say ultimately that descriptions don't apply. So from a non-dual sensibility, not only would they not attempt to explain paranormal activity, they wouldn't even attempt to ultimately explain normal activity, because they're pointing out that the stories themselves, in relation to what we call our actual experience, the stories ultimately will reveal that they make no sense whatsoever. They can't really be applied to this vibrant, pulsing happening of this moment. Even the arising of apparent storylines, there's no way of saying what that is. You know, they're identified as a particular form that gets labeled a storyline, but that label is meaningless, ultimately. In a different country, it's a different label. The apparent form is meaningless because, you know, a passing thought is just a will-o'-the-wisp. Whatever this is, this vibrant, pulsing event of this moment, it has no particular form. It has no particular name. So there's no tool for literally, truly describing it. Even though we can come up with all kinds of apparent descriptions of apparent forms, all this is saying is that ultimately those descriptions can't be the truth, because the forms aren't legitimately stable. Existence doesn't have a stable form to be described. He asks, am I uncomfortable addressing the subject because I doubt any such phenomena has or can occur? And no, I'm not uncomfortable addressing the subject. I would say not only are so-called paranormal experiences, not only are those strange and wondrous, even this happening right now, which everybody else assumes to be very normal, and everybody else assume, every other apparent person or most other apparent people seem to feel that they understand what this is. My own sense of this is also absolutely strange and wondrous. That there's no possible way of saying what this is. There's no possible way of saying what it's going to express next. Not in any exact and true way. Now, let's see, his next point is that if such paranormal phenomena do occur, such as Yogananda's resurrected guru appearing to him and assuring him he was alive on another planet, helping the inhabitants work out their karma, how would that affect a non-dual sensibility, and would it amend it in any way? No, because within the world of apparent history, the classical non-dual sensibility was laid out, was expressed, you know, roughly 2800, 2900 years ago in the Ashtavakra Gita, where it ultimately declares that descriptions don't apply to this. No description of what's happening in this moment is true, because all the descriptions are based on names and notions of form. And the names aren't the legitimate name. There is no legitimate name for this. The names are simply sounds that point to this mysterious happening, or portions of this mysterious happening. And everybody's basic so-called experience of existence is that this happening has no constant form. So whether we're dealing with stories of normal human life and normal human behavior, or we're dealing with stories of paranormal human activity, a paranormal human life, a non-dual sensibility says neither one of these descriptions actually truly apply to this totally unexplainable happening. And coming to his last point, he says, or perhaps all we can say is that the universe is a pretty amazing place, and if this stuff happens, great, but it's no more amazing than babies growing in their mother's womb, grass growing, or the genius of Einstein. And yes, I agree with that totally, that absolutely every apparent expression of whatever this is absolutely amazing. There's no way to say what it is. There's no possible true description of this. Whatever this is, it simply presents itself. It happens spontaneously. Everything we apparently are is simply an expression of whatever this is. All right, so another person has written in saying, in Blix, the simplicity of flute slips by in the wazzle we weave around it. When you make the statement, nothing can be said, people wonder that if they could use the language with greater subtlety, or they... Actually, let me start that again. When you make the statement, nothing can be said, people have the impression that if they could use the language with greater subtlety, they would be able to describe this. Wazzle comes and Blix flutes of itself. So, this is just this person's comment that he sent in. And I read it out because it is a subtle point. When I do declare that from this non-dual sensibility, that descriptions do not apply to whatever this is, whatever this apparent happening of the moment is, this vibrant pulsing sense of presence or isness or being, that no true description, there is no true description of this. Descriptions do not apply. That is the ultimate non-dual stance regarding this, whatever this is. And people do have the impression that, yeah, they can somehow describe it in a, you know, to some degree, and therefore we end up with chat sites all around the world talking about a non-dual sensibility, and it's just endless descriptions of existence. Or, you know, it's either positing something about existence or it's negating something about existence intellectually. So the focus is always on description. It's either describing existence as something in particular, or it's constantly focused on description and negating all kinds of ideas. In either case, the focus is on description. To say it is something is a description. To say it isn't something is a description. But that's not the non-dual sensibility. The non-dual sensibility is none of these descriptions apply ever in any true fashion. So then we're left with just this, which is not a thought. And more than that, even the apparent thoughts that arise, it's acknowledged that that happening itself, that vibrant pulsing itself, is nothing that's truly describable. It's not a thought. It's not a description. There's no way of saying what it is. So then we're left with simply this vibrancy, this energetic sense of presence that has no particular name and no describable form. All right, another person has written in saying that she read my books over a year ago, or one of my books, and there was a deep sense of relief and peace that came over her, along with a knowing that she could put all of the other books and teachings down, because she felt that what I expressed pulled everything together, and it seemed to complete a puzzle. She knew she didn't really need any other information or pointers. Yet she goes on to say that after a number of months, curiosity and an apparent interest arose again as other teachers popped into my experience, mostly on Facebook. Her mind started getting busy again, enjoying different expressions of truth, enjoying them until recently. One day she noticed that she was feeling agitated and out of sorts. Along with that, she became aware of how she had started judging others for their apparent less than correct way of being. She can't really remember the specifics, but it felt horrible. So then she goes on to say that out of the blue, my name popped into her awareness. She noticed it, but did nothing until a couple of days later when my name came up again in her awareness. This time, she was moved to open my website and listen to the most recent monthly response. As she listened, she said it took only a few minutes before all of the mental gibberish that had been apparently causing agitation and judgment simply melted away. And she realized what had happened, that instead of viewing life from the larger happening that's automatically happening, as I had pointed out, she was once again breaking it down and segmenting life into pieces, saying that this piece is correct and that piece needs to be changed. She said no wonder she was feeling so horrible. So she wanted to thank me for what I was offering and express a very deep appreciation. But she said she had one question for me. So she says, I do have one question for you, if you wouldn't mind. Although I am fully aboard with your sensibilities about life, I am still very surprised by the depth of grieving I am experiencing for a close friend who passed away recently. His death was not at all unexpected. He was quite a bit older than I am, and although I care deeply for him, he wasn't part of my daily life. Plus, being that I understand there really is no death aside from within my story, I feel a bit befuddled and will admit that I am judging myself for what's appearing as a deep and continued grieving. Part of me knows it's just what's appearing, but, why can't I let go of the but and just let it be? Just buts appearing too? Thanks for any thoughts you may have about this. Please keep up the great work. Lots of love. All right. Okay, even if we do acknowledge that this vibrant pulsing event of this moment, this sense of vibrant presence, this pulsing happening of this moment, even though we may acknowledge that ultimately we can't give it any true name or description, that ultimately it has no stable arrangement or form that could be described as its actual being, even though that acknowledgement may take place, there is still the world of apparent form. And there is still the world of apparent storylines, even though ultimately there's no way of saying what that actually is. This happening that we call apparent storylines and the happening that we call apparent form, that still makes itself obvious. And within those apparent storylines, there is an identification of form. There is the fact that we like certain forms. There is an appeal to certain forms. And when those forms fade away, there is a sense of loss to their changing. It's not that they've disappeared totally. It's just whatever this is, whatever this vibrant, pulsing sense of presence is right now, it has no particular form. So it presents a certain apparent form for a certain amount of apparent time, and then that form fades away. It moves on, this happening moves on to present itself as a different apparent form. Now, my describing that is focusing on the world of description and the world of apparent form. So in that, there are certain emotions that arise as a natural part of all of this arising. So, in particular, with another apparent human being, there may be a great love for another individual, another so-called individual, and with that individual's apparent fading away, there is a sense of loss. Now, that situation of a particular apparent person dying, fading away, that will carry with it a certain sense of loss, but it's also possible that it may carry with it a greater sense of the instability of existence. And so the passing away of an apparent friend may also carry with it a deeper sense of the universe not having any particular stable form. And there's something very natural in this expression of whatever this ultimately is that does not feel comfortable with this instability. Now, there's no way of saying exactly what that's about. But the fact that these storylines arise describing form, they carry with it a wish or an outlook that life has a certain stability. And then this is always swept aside because whatever we want to hang on to, ultimately we can't hang on to it. Whatever we want to be stable, ultimately it isn't stable. So whether it's a particular insight, whether it's a particular mood, whether it's our body, a relationship, the company of a certain friend through life, we would like all of that to be stable, but ultimately it's not. And we never know at any moment when any of it is simply going to shift. This apparent form is going to shift in a way that we're not expecting it to shift. And that carries with it a sense of dis-ease. We feel uneasy. It's the contradiction of this focus on apparent form as though there is something stable, and then the constant reminder, life reminding itself that it has no stable form. Now, if we put a lot of focus on the world of stories, we inevitably, or we're inclined, if we have an ongoing focus on this description of form and the anticipation that these forms are stable, there's going to be a very strong sense of uneasiness when life asserts the fact that it is not, it has no stable form. That, you know, it's perhaps, if we're going to use description, we could point out that the vibrant pulsing happening, you know, using these words to point to this happening that's not a word, not a thought, that this has no particular form. Now, in our usual day-to-day activities, the focus is mainly on storylines. We're using, whatever this is, it seems as though we're using stories to communicate with other human beings, and that these descriptions of form are what we become accustomed to. So from time to time, when it's revealed to us that all these apparent forms are ultimately unstable, there can be a very deep sense of the instability of life, a sense of insecurity, but only in relation to these stories about stability and an anticipation of stability. That appreciation of the ultimate unformed quality of existence in relation to the usual stories of form and the idea that we're dealing with some kind of stability that we can hang on to, it can be more than just a sense of insecurity. It can also carry with it a sense of great loss. We begin to look at all of existence as situations of loss. But again, all of that exists only within the world of stories and the world of apparent form, because it's only in the world of stories about apparent form that there is any sense of gain or loss. You know, if we acknowledge the actual unexplainable, vibrant, pulsing happening of this moment, it's just always this sense of a presence that has no particular form. So it's never a matter of gain or loss. It's always just this ongoing sense of presence that has no particular form. So there's no way of saying exactly why this particular person is experiencing a longer sense of grieving over the loss of her friend. But it may be, it may be a situation that she's experiencing, or she's having a sense of more than the loss of this particular friend. There may be more of what we might call a universal angst regarding the moving, shifting, dancing event of existence, in contradiction to the stories we normally focus on, the stories of form, the stories of relative stability. Ultimately, from this non-dual sensibility, it doesn't really matter whether this sense of grieving, this apparent sense of grieving, occurs for a short time or occurs for a long time. There is only the happening of existence, just this vibrant, pulsing sense of presence, this isness, this being, expressing itself in whatever way it expresses itself. And, you know, by that, I'm not saying that, you know, this thing has some active ability to express itself. It just is what it is. So there is just this vibrant sense of presence. It has no particular form. So in any apparent moment, it just is what it is. And whatever it seems to be is on its way to some other seeming appearance. So at some point, you know, this happening that we call grieving is going to play itself out and move on to some other expression within this world of apparent form. All right. Another person has written in saying, "Hi, Daryl. Just finished reading your book, Dismantling the Fantasy, and found it perfect in every way possible as it points to the highest truth and wisdom for any human being. Your main three points, number one, that everything is changing, number two, that no one is doing anything, and number three, that nothing is explainable, are like a tripod that holds the truth well balanced with nothing left unexplored. However, due to a long-standing experience with Vipassana meditation, the forest hermitage tradition, Advaita teachers like Ramesh Balsekar, Nisargadatta Maharaj, Ramana Maharshi, Nathan Gill, as well as standalone teachers like Eckhart Tolle and other not so well-known teachers and concepts, I can't help but try to fit consciousness into this picture. And although you have explained in your book that we cannot find this watcher, awareness, or witness, etc., I would like some further clarification on this, please, as I can't seem to include consciousness in this ever-changing flow. This is due to the logic that there must be something that is aware of this ever-changing, inexplicable happening. If there was nothing to observe this, who or what can claim that it is so? Not claim it as such, but who can acknowledge it to be such if there wasn't something which is not changing, permanent, and forever witness to all phenomena, including thoughts of a me and all the rest of it?" So, Daryl, although I resonate with all that you say, and I am even doubtful of what I have written above, I fluctuate between complete rejection of all that you have said, just because you don't acknowledge consciousness as a transcendent quality that does not belong to the flow, and at other times I resonate with your pointers 100%. I understand that this is all happening of itself, but my affiliation with the consciousness aspect of spirituality is deep-rooted and backed up by 95% or more of teachings out there. The only other teacher that I know of who does not incorporate consciousness, and in fact dismisses it in a harsh way, is Yuji Krishnamurti, who I admire deeply. In fact, there are many similarities between your points and those of Yuji Krishnamurti, but the startling difference is in the manner that it is offered, as you seem to be kind and gentle in your approach, and he was angry, abrupt, and fearlessly direct in blasting people's concepts to smithereens. So thanks very much for this wonderfully simple but profound wisdom you offer. I would be very grateful if you could clear my understanding of consciousness in the best way possible. All right, he's saying that I don't identify something called consciousness as some constant witness to existence. And he's having difficulty in working the word consciousness into my expression, into what I present as a non-dual sense of existence. So he lists other teachers as somehow supporting the notion of a consciousness that is ongoing, an ongoing witness to the event of existence. However, I would take exception to this list that he's offered. So he says, due to his long-standing experience with Vipassana meditation, the forest hermitage tradition, Advaita teachers like Ramesh Balsekar, Nisargadatta Maharaj, Ramana Maharshi, and Nathan Gill, as well as standalone teachers like Eckhart Tolle, he's saying that ultimately they would identify something called consciousness. However, I'll take exception to that statement. If we look, so let's say with this situation of Vipassana meditation, Vipassana meditation is the basic meditation of Buddhism, and the Buddha described it as the only way to enlightenment. And by that, it's not a particular practice, it's ultimately simply an acknowledgement of certain basic facts about existence. Now, within Buddhism, the Buddha was very clear that he was never saying there was a consciousness that went from one moment to the next. In fact, there is one entire sutra where he berates one of his monks, a monk named Sati. He's referred to as Sati, the fisherman's son, who began teaching that there was a consciousness that went from one moment to the next. And when the Buddha heard about this, he called Sati up in front of everybody that was around at that time, all of the various monks and nuns that were around at that time, and he just lambasted this monk. He said, "I have never taught that there is a consciousness that goes from one moment to the next. I've never taught that there is anything that goes from one moment to the next, that there is any sense of permanence in existence." So the Buddha didn't put forward the identification of something called consciousness. In fact, he ultimately said that when there is an arriving at what actually is, there is no longer the attempt to ultimately describe life in terms of physical forms, feelings, perceptions, mental activities, or states of consciousness, that these descriptions do not apply. And those five groups that he specified, they make up all of the descriptions of existence that human beings apparently apply to existence. And he said none of these descriptions apply. It's also the case that Ramana Maharshi would often use the word awareness, that there is only awareness, but he would also sometimes use the word existence as the equal to the word awareness, that ultimately whatever this is, whatever the happening is that we call awareness or call existence, it's not really awareness, it's not really existence. So he could interchange the word awareness with the word existence. It didn't matter to him. Now, he would often say that our true identity is absolute consciousness, but he would also go on to say that the state that he called realization is a state of not knowing anything or becoming anything. So the state of realization, in his terms, was not a state where you're knowing that you're something called consciousness. He would say that if one is realized, one is that which alone is, and one cannot describe that state. One can only be that. So ultimately, Ramana Maharshi was not saying that we're something called consciousness. We can also look at someone like Nisargadatta Maharaj, who during a certain portion of his life stated quite often that we were something called consciousness. But then, not too long before his death, he began to say something very different. So in the record of his teachings that was put together in the book I Am That, he declared often that we're something called consciousness, that that's all there is, just consciousness. But then in a much smaller volume of his teachings, which were recorded not too long before he died, in a book called Consciousness and the Absolute, he declared that through a lot of his teaching years, he thought he was something called consciousness, but now he realizes he's not. And he spends his time pointing to an unexplainable dynamic, a playful liveliness. Once again, the vibrant, pulsing happening of this moment, and states outright that there isn't any way to label this in any true fashion, and there isn't any way to describe this in any true fashion. And I'd like to quote some lines from that book, Consciousness and the Absolute. He says, through concepts, you want to understand the riddle of existence, and that is precisely why you're not able to understand. Nothing in the conceptual world is true. You must look at yourself, get to know yourself. What are you without name or label? You did not have this concept, I am, in the womb. Give up concepts and inquire into your beingness. So let's make it very simple. We have the feeling in this moment that something's happening. There is the feeling of basically existing. There is what we would call the seeing, the hearing, the touching, the tasting, the smelling, and the thinking in this moment. Now here's the question. What is it? Now, none of the labels apply, because we all have in our storyline the story that when we came out of the womb, we didn't have labels for anything. Our story says that other people taught us these labels. And so there is this happening, this vibrant, pulsing sense of presence. What is it? And the fact is, there is no way of saying what it is. It's just this. There's no true way of saying what it is. If we live in one apparent country, we get one set of sounds that point to it. If we live in another country that speaks a different language, we get another set of sounds that point to this. If we all agreed, we could use words like blix and flute and wazzle. So instead of talking about consciousness and body and awareness, let's talk about blix and flute and wazzle. They're just meaningless sounds. They just point to this mysterious happening. And furthermore, everything in our apparent experience tells us that this happening has no particular form. All of the apparent forms that we know of, we have the sense that they're changing. So again, to quote Nisargadatta, he says, Give up concepts and inquire into your beingness. It has no form. That fact gets completely lost, and this happening is recognized as form only. You see a body and you think the body is you, and that you do everything through this body. What is has no form. The body has been changing all the time. Which form has any permanency? Formation has no form or design. It's an apparition only. It can't be the truth. It's a big hoax, a fraud. The ultimate state is that state in which there is a total end to body, name, and form. And where is the end of body, name, and form? It's just this happening. What's happening right now? Everyone's experience says this has no particular form that can be described as the form of existence. Existence has no stable arrangement, no stable form. It has no legitimate name. The names that we have for it are just sounds that point to this mysterious happening. If we drop the focus on names and forms, there's just this vibrant pulsing of what we call this moment. There's just this. And we can even drop the word this. And whatever this is, it's simply happening on its own. There's no supposed human being that's making any of it happen. The entire process that we call a human being, the body, the brain, the needs, the interests, the concerns, the urges to action, the actions themselves, all of that is just this mysterious happening. This mysterious sense of presence that has no particular form. Now, this person who wrote in also mentioned Yuji Krishnamurti, and that Yuji was kind of abrupt in his and seemingly unkind in a lot of his expression. I mean, he was just very abrupt. So if somebody came to him and was saying, "Oh, you know, I'm feeling this anxiety," Yuji would say something like, "No, you're not." And the person would say, "Yes, I am." And Yuji would say, "No, you're not." And the person would say, "Yeah, I'm feeling anxious right now." And Yuji would say, "No, you're not." So he was declaring something without taking any time to point out certain other aspects of what he was saying. So I would like to quote a few things of Yuji's as well. And this comes from the very first and last public talk he gave around 1972. He was asked to address a group of people in India. And it's supposedly the very first and last public talk he ever gave on non-duality. So he says, "I'm going to say a few words about the state of not knowing. This not knowing is not just my state. This is your state, the state of every one of you. But since you're looking to attain something else, you're confused. Can this natural state be captured, contained, and expressed through words? It cannot. This is where you are neither conscious nor unconscious, and that expresses itself in its own way. What is happening here is only the expression of a state where you don't know what's happening. That living state is functioning in its own way, in its natural way. Here is a table. I don't really know what it is. At the same time, if you ask me, what's that over there, I would immediately say it's a chair. It comes automatically. There's nothing to achieve, nothing to accomplish, nothing to attain, no destination to arrive at. Truth is a movement. Reality is movement." So again, he's just pointing to this vibrant, pulsing, unformed happening, this unformed sense of presence. "If you think it makes sense, you haven't understood a thing. And if you think it doesn't make sense, you haven't understood it either. It's just words, 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 words. Someone told you this is a table. You don't know, apart from what you've been told. Every time you look at this, you repeat that it's a table. What are you doing that for? Why are you hung up on phrases? This is a state where there's no division saying you are asleep, awake, or dreaming. There's no division at all. I don't even know if I'm alive or dead. I have no way of knowing anything. How is it expressing itself? It's expressing itself as action in its own way. This is like the barking of a dog. If you put this on that level and just listen to this vibration, you are out. You will walk out and you will never listen again to anybody else about this in your lifetime. Finished. I say there is no such division as waking, dreaming, and deep sleep. I have to use adverbs and adjectives because they are part of the language, but they don't mean anything to me. Everything that is happening is movement. Where is the movement taking place? There's no way of saying. As long as the focus is on thought, it's not possible for you to understand what I'm talking about. So, just to wrap this up, there are a lot of non-dual presenters, apparent non-dual presenters out there, and they're saying all kinds of things. And in one moment, it may seem as though they're saying one thing, but if we really, with these ones that I've pointed to here, and these are ones that, you know, this person who wrote in had indicated were saying that we're ultimately consciousness, if we really look at what they were saying something much more profound than that. They were pointing to the fact that there is this vibrant sense of presence right now. It's not a thought. Even if we don't say anything about it, it still makes itself obvious. Now, the statement that says there has to be a knower of this is not a logical statement. It's just an assumption. So to say that there has to be a knower of this because it's only possible for this to make itself obvious if there's a knower, that's just an assumption that somebody taught you to say. There's this happening, and even if there isn't any intellectual movement, what we would call a movement of the intellect, this happening is obvious. There is no awareness separate from this happening. There is no experience of something called awareness that's separate from this happening. This vibrant, pulsing sense of presence is what we call awareness. And if we focus on the apparent forms within this vibrant, pulsing sense of presence or this vibrant, pulsing happening, we can call the big happening awareness, and then if we focus on the apparent forms that this happening expresses, we end up calling those the objects of awareness. But it's the same happening. So we take the same mysterious, vibrant pulsing, and we turn it into two different things conceptually. An awareness being aware of certain forms, certain things. When none of it is true. These labels, awareness and objects of awareness, they simply point to this mysterious happening. And this mysterious happening has no particular form. If it's acknowledged that this happening is happening spontaneously, that every apparent form that we know of is simply the moving, shifting, dancing expression of whatever this is, that it happens spontaneously, it might be acknowledged that there isn't any human being or any sense of awareness that's separate from this, that's directing it in any way or influencing it in any way. And at that point, there can be no concern for how it ultimately expresses itself. There's just this, appearing to be whatever it is. And whatever it seems to be right now, that's not what it actually is, because that is not its stable form. Whatever it seems to be in this moment is moving on to some other apparent expression. Because whatever this is, it has no stable arrangement, ultimately. Now, this person had added a little note a little while later, and he said, when you do address my question, if you don't mind saying a little bit about why things are not explainable, I mean, forms may not be definable, But this very flow or process can be described or pointed to as you have been doing, can it not? Yes, flow. We can acknowledge that this is ultimately what we might call flow, and that that happening can be pointed to. But that happening is not the word, is not defined by the word flow. The word flow simply points to an ongoing absence of form. It doesn't describe a particular form. And in fact, the word flow that might be arising in this moment is itself just a totally unexplainable happening. We only call it flow because somebody told us to call it flow. The word flow, we only call it a word because somebody told us to call it a word. Why are we hung up on these phrases? If all the labels are laid aside in this moment, it still feels like something's happening. It doesn't feel like there's a blankness and nothingness. So there's this vibrant, pulsing sense of presence, this unformed happening, unformed, indefinable happening. And that just points to this. So let's just drop all the words. And there's just this. And the apparent words will come back as an expression of this. There's no way of saying what that is either. Even the notion that there's a bunch of us sitting here understanding this is a false story. This is just happening. Whatever this is, just is what it is right now, and there's no way of ultimately saying what it is. There's no way of truly saying what this is, truly defining this in any way whatsoever. There's just this. All right, this is going on a little long. It's almost an hour and a half already. So let's end this portion of it here. And if you're interested in continuing at some point, you can go on to part 2.